15th regular board meeting of San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We met in closed session and discussed a conference with labor negotiators with our agency designated representatives. We discussed public employee dismissal, discipline, or release, and also anticipated litigation. Do I hear a consensus on the order of business? Any changes? Everything okay? All right. Mm-hmm. Moving forward. We are going to administer the oath of office to new and re-elected trustees. Dr. Prater.
Yes. We have a new person on our, elected to our school board, and I'd like to honor and acknowledge Mrs. Evelyn Frame. As you can see, she is well-loved and respected as an educator in our district for a long time. She just retired this last past June, and she's got so much energy still left that she's ready to pay it forward as a member of our school board. So part of the certificate of election and oath of office, the newly elected trustees, if I could have you stand and we will conduct the oath of office. If I could actually have you come around and stand this way, then we'll be able to do that.
No. Just the newly elected or appointed?
Newly elected.
Because apparently when we didn't have an opponent, you're actually appointed, as it turns out.
I wasn't ready this time, so it was Marilyn and Jim.
Marilyn was unopposed.
I would also like to congratulate Mrs. Roger, Mrs. Sheffer, and Mr. Buckman for their service in the next 4 years. So. So when I say I and then pause, you say your name and then we'll continue and just repeat after me. I.
Pause.
Oh, hand up, I'm sorry. Do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California. I'll go a little shorter now. Against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California. That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter. Congratulations.
Now that we have that out of the way, item 4.04, approval of the minutes of December 18th. Any changes, revisions, discussion? If not, then I'd like a motion to approve those, please.
I'll move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, passes unanimously. Item 4.05, approval of the minutes of January 10, 2019.
I move approval of the minutes of January 10, 2019.
Any discussion or revisions? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. All right. Now for our wonderful presentations by our student representatives to the board. Did you draw straws over there? Do we know? Y'all ready? Okay.
Hi, I'm Annalise from Morro Bay High School, and we just recently got back from winter break, so we're starting off our second semester, and it's off to a good start so far. In terms of ASB events, coming up on February 1st, we have our annual Neon Dance, and it's going to be space-themed this year, so ASB is preparing and planning for that right now. In terms of winter sports, this Friday marks the beginning of our annual CIT tournament that we host at our school, and 90 wrestling teams will be coming and competing in this tournament, so it's really a huge event and huge fundraiser for our program, and we have a really strong wrestling program, so come out and support us if you'd like to. In addition to that, both our girls and boys soccer teams, I believe 2 weeks ago, competed in the Garces tournament, and they both came home with second place. And then this past Friday, our boys basketball team competed against Templeton and had a win. So thank you. I hope everyone's doing well.
Okay, so break happened 2 weeks ago, and it was very much needed, I think. Everyone could agree to that. And so before break, we ended the school, the 4 weeks we had, with a black light rally, which means we did everything in the dark with very little light. And I think the highlight of that was definitely our drum line. And they don't really get recognized that much because we don't really have opportunities to see band, like outside of like competitions and football games. But they really like just put all of their effort into this rally, and it was really amazing. And they like had lights attached to their instruments and everything, and it was just mind-blowing, in my opinion. And we have our Slowtown Showdown this Friday, which is our basketball game against Mission. It's always some friendly competition, and it's always fun to come out and support So High. So if you're free Friday night, stop by. And this Saturday, we actually have a robotics competition hosted at So High. And our robotics team like is really good, actually. And they had a few like mishaps with the entire fire thing, but they're full of intelligent kids and so hardworking, and it's so cool to see that they're being recognized at So High. So it should be fun and a lot more events to come, but I will talk about that at the next meetings.
Well, thank you. As usual, a lot going on, and it really is wonderful to see the robotics team coming back after the unfortunate fire. They are hardworking, and it's great to see them getting back on their feet and doing what they enjoy doing. So, thank you. So, as always, thank you very much for coming. We know you have other things going on in your lives. If you wish to head on, you're welcome to do so. If you wish to stay, we'd love to have you. But we understand that you have other things going on. Thank you. All right, tonight we get to welcome and learn about Monarch Grove Elementary School program highlights.
Yes, I'd like to introduce the principal, Ms. Laura Storm, who will share some program highlights at Monarch Grove Elementary.
Thank you. Good evening. When thinking about what to share, I wanted to talk about something that I thought was unique. And to my knowledge, we are the only school in the district that has done something like this, so I think it's worth talking about. So I want to introduce to you One School, One Book. And we took this on this fall. The idea is that the entire school, with their families, reads the same book at the same time. So, Luana, can you... So there you go. They read the same book on the same schedule. So everyone goes home and reads chapter one night, and then they read chapter two the next night and chapter three the next night. And it really builds a family and school culture around reading. And One School, One Book is actually a national effort. There's schools all across the country that participate and choose different books. And we chose The World According to Humphrey, which is about a hamster that lives in a classroom. We picked this book because it is the first in a series, and so kids can get engaged in a series and keep reading, and families, and also it was in Spanish, so we were able to include our English learner families and offer copies in Spanish or English or both, depending on what they wanted. Luana, can you? So basically the process is you have to build a lot of excitement around this book, so we kept it a total mystery and gave out some clues. We had kids hunting in the library, trying to find a book that was read. Mrs. Antoniani, is this it? And get them really excited to come. We did a big book reveal with some parent education around why read aloud to your child, even when they're older. What's the importance of kids hearing books read aloud? How does that build family bonds? That kind of thing. And we revealed the book that night and handed it out. And Ellen graciously dressed up as a hamster for us. The whole staff there dressed as hamsters. And the next day at school, we were all hamsters again because we knew that if the kids were excited about the book, that's how the families would get hooked into reading, right? Mom, Dad, I want you to read this to me. I want you to read this to me. We kept it going through daily trivia. So let's say chapter one was Tuesday night. On Wednesday morning, a student would come on the loudspeaker and read trivia questions, and the kids could try to answer them in class. Teachers did different activities in the classroom as well. And then we also had Humphrey move into our library. Chirp, Squeaks, and Bubbles in Los Osos, the pet store, donated a hamster. And we're like, Humphrey's here, and the kids would go in and visit. And so it was really good, kept it exciting and fun. And then at the very end, there was like a little raffle slip that families could turn in about like who their favorite character was and why, or what they liked about the book, or what they liked about the project. And we did drawings, and we gave away more Humphrey books, and we dressed as our favorite characters that day, and just had a big celebration that we had finished the book. So, Luana, do you want to? So, I have some families that came out tonight to share their experiences, and I'd like to introduce them to you. And some of them are actually up there in the photos, so I'll let you see if you can do some matching here. But I'll start with Lexi and Pika Bell. Pika is in first grade.
Hi, thank you for having us. My name is Lexi Bell, and this is my daughter, Pika, who's in first grade. And we really enjoyed One School, One Book. I think Laura really hit it on the head that it creates this culture of reading and sort of an expectation that we're all reading together. And not just the reading, but those trivia questions and the way in which parents were communicated throughout about what we were reading and what was happening in the classroom. Really, we had conversations with friends on the walk to school, and we have friends in other grades, and Pika could talk to her friends in second grade and kindergarten all about the same book, and that really, I think, solidified that feeling that we're all part of this community and we're doing it together. So we really enjoyed that aspect of it. And if you found us on the pictures up there, we have Pika's younger brother in the picture. And for us, we do read a lot out loud at home, but I usually didn't include the three-year-old in chapter book reading because I thought he wouldn't stay engaged and we might read picture books all together. And so this really introduced to me the idea that we can read books that are beyond his level and he can get a lot out of that and feel like excited that he's reading like his big sister. So that's something that we really enjoyed as a family. So Pika, do you want to say what you enjoyed about One School, One Book?
I liked that Humphrey was fearless and that we all read the book together.
Thank you. Thank you, Pika.
So I also have Maddox and Harper Maitre. Maddox is in fourth grade and Harper is in second. They've made a top five of what they like about One School, One Book. I haven't heard it yet either, so this will be a great surprise for all of us. So Harper and Maddox.
Another reveal.
Hi, my name is Maddox. I'm a fourth grader at Monarch Grove.
Hi, my name is Harper, and I'm a second grader at Monarch Grove.
We're going to give you 5 reasons why one school and one book was awesome. Number 1, they chose a book that they knew that would be a great experience for everyone and that everyone would enjoy it. The character, it was a funny, adventurous, and emotional. My mom even cried.
Number 2. We got a pet hamster. His name was Humphrey. He lived in the library. He was cute.
Number 3. Every day was trivia day, and kids got called up to the office to speak on the loudspeaker of the trivia questions. I even got to called up once, if you can see up there.
Number 4. The teachers all dressed up like hamsters. Some were gray, some were brown. On the last day, the kids got to dress up all like their favorite characters.
Number 5. This experience was a great kickoff for the school year. It made everyone get excited about reading and want to talk about reading, and that's about it.
Thank you.
And one last family, Nadine Norris and Kenzie Norris. Kenzie is in second grade.
I've been nominated to speak first. We really enjoyed reading Humphrey together as a family. Our lives are busy and crazy, just like we got here late. And it was nice to know that we have this bonding time at home, a chapter a night, which we really stuck to, even if it was hard sometimes. And then the discussion afterwards, sometimes we'd be speaking for a half an hour, trying to guess the next questions and really dissecting the characters and the values that we learned. It's a great book for any age, actually.
What I really liked about this is that we all could get together and read a book. And it also helped with my table mates because we weren't really getting along very good.
Good. Well, good. Thank you for sharing.
So what I liked about Humphrey is that he secretly was helping them out with different problems.
Thank you.
So I want to close. There was a parent that felt pretty passionately about this, but she couldn't be with us. And so she asked if she could write something that I would share with you. And so I'm going to close with this. One school, one book was a wonderful experience for our family, particularly for our first grader, Axel. Not only did it lead to a love of the Humphrey series, I think he's now on book 6, it was really a game changer for his reading in general. After finishing The World According to Humphrey as a family, Axel took it upon himself to reread the book on his own. It gave him new confidence, having previously heard the book being read aloud, and now he is completely in love with reading all chapter books. As parents, it also helped us to realize that he was ready for the transition from storybooks to chapter books.
Great. Thanks.
So, Luan, I have one more slide. With just a few more pictures, and thank you for having us. And if you have any questions, let me know.
Are there any questions? That is me. I will say that one of the highlights of my serving on the Board of Trustees for San Luis Coastal Unified School District was dressing up as a hamster. Mr. Unger.
So I'm curious, how did the different grade levels differentiate the discussions that they had about the book, and how did that apply to what else they did in the school?
You know, the beautiful thing about the book, as Kenzie kind of alluded to, is this little class hamster He goes home with the families on the weekends, and he ends up helping them with all kinds of different problems. So one student never talked in class, and Humphrey got home with her and found out that her family didn't speak English. And so Humphrey helped her get enough confidence to sing for the class. And then in another chapter, he helped a family who always had the TV on really loud, and so the boy was always really loud in class, turn off the TV and be together as a family. And so it really had themes and values that I think applied to every grade level. And so the trivia was more just a fun thing, like to stay engaged and kind of keep in the reading. But kindergartners can talk about those things, about putting yourselves in other people's shoes and empathy and kindness, and so can fifth graders. So I think, you know, the teachers were really able to bring that in. And there's a picture, I think it's in, yeah, right here in the top left. That's first graders actually listening to the book on the Chromebook. So we had linked up on our website all of the chapters so that if there was a night where, like, a family couldn't read, they could listen. And then in first grade, they would always listen the next day because the teachers were trying to teach them, well, you would reread a book. You can re-listen, too. So it really got everybody kind of, teachers, we were really aware that maybe some kids weren't getting read to at home, and how can we fold that in, too. So, yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
First of all, I want to thank the families and students that came. It really brings it alive, and I know it's special to come out, and I appreciate it. And, Laura, I want to thank you for this. I also want to let you know next year I really want to know what book it is. So,
you can dress up.
So, well, I didn't know if I want to dress up, but I really want to be part of it.
Okay.
And third, where do I buy a hamster? I'm, like, totally,
you know,
inspired now.
Well, it's so funny because we had a lot of kids come back from winter break, and you know what they got for Christmas?
Oh.
Was hamsters, like, in different, all over grade, different grade levels and whatever, and we were just laughing because we're like, this is totally because of this book. And we have had families say, what's next? When are we doing this again? What's next? And, you know, hopefully next school year, and we will never pick a book and tell.
So. Thank you very much, Mrs. Storm.
Thank you.
And thank you to the family. All right, next item is 5.03, and I see Dr. Brescia out there getting ready to give his annual report. Thank you for coming.
Good evening. It's nice to be here. You might want to avoid Sammy the Snake next year if those are all the gifts. That might cause some problems with unanticipated consequences here. Congratulations to the re-elected and newly elected trustees. Dr. Prater, Happy New Year to all of you. It's an honor to serve as your county superintendent, and I'm just to provide you a few updates that overlap across the county, hitting on our career technical education, a few of the things with our Grizzly Youth Academy, and then a few words on the budget. So I want to start off with our career technical ed across the county. The previous program of ROP evolved into what is now called career technical ed, or CTE. The impetus for this was the large $6 million grant that the county received for all of the schools. Subsequent to that, we have had four grants totaling about another $4 million called California Apprenticeship Initiatives, and those have partnered with Cuesta College, Cal Poly, and the trades. We started with our Ticket into Tech program. We had the first 100 students move through, and I'm very proud to say that the individuals that moved through this mirrored the county in terms of ethnicity, demographics, socioeconomics, which the student population within the county, which oftentimes when we'll see sometimes at higher ed, you don't see that. So I was very, very pleased to see that. We had 900 applicants for 50 slots the first year, and 47% female. So that was quite impressive. The companies that partnered with us in this are MindBody, the local Amazon branch here in SLO, iFixit, IQMS in Paso Robles, TransUnion, Cuesta College, Techtegrity, Clever Ducks, Digital West, Martin Resorts, PG&E, the Economic Vitality Corporation, Poly, seven of the chambers throughout the county partnered, and several of the trades as well. So very, very pleased to see that. So when I asked, why are we moving forward with some of these professions, these trades, these pathways that at least my generation did not experience in school, and the answer is, if you think of the jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago, these are things that our students that are currently in our classrooms need to learn, such as app developer, social media manager, driverless car engineer. These are things that our students are going to be doing, cloud computing specialist. Our motto is future careers locally grown. So I want to show you a young woman who went through the schools here in San Luis Obispo, attended university, and is a recipient of that. So if you could play the first clip there.
I originally was a Cal Poly student. I was doing modern languages and literature. I was learning Chinese and Spanish. And then I switched into the business major to do international business, and they got rid of that major right when I completed my change. And so I went into accounting. And then when I graduated, I've been doing tax accounting for the last 4 years. And so I'm currently a senior tax accountant. I'm the treasurer of SoftTech, and I heard about this program kind of a little bit last year when it was just the IT and software tester program. And then again this year, the president of SoftTech had mentioned it to me when I was feeling really unfulfilled in my career. And so when he had mentioned it, I kind of like video games a lot. And so when I was telling him, like, I really would like something that's kind of like video game related, but I don't really want to do video games, but just something that's really technical, really creative and fun, and really just not so heavily data-oriented, but something along those routes, because I am really good with data. And when I told him kind of like all the things that I really want in a career, he mentioned, ticket to tech. You know about it. Like, this is for you. And I was like, I don't know. It's really not... it's not made for people like me. I have a career. And he's like, yes, it is for people like you. It's the start over a brand new career. And when I really looked at what it was for, it was a total aha moment that, yeah, it's for me. Thank you, Slo County Office of Education. I really appreciate this opportunity.
So what we're looking at here is taking our local population, our young people, not only our high school students, but our post-secondary students, allowing them to stay in our county with livable wage jobs. So all of our high schools throughout the county have done almost a five-fold increase in pathways. As a result of this, you're seeing that at both of your high school, actually all of your high schools, even your continuation high school, where students are having access to programs moving forward. Not only our young people, but our adults. We have three other pathways, apprenticeship pathways, in which your own employees are participating in. 45 individuals throughout our county that are classified employees, non-teaching, are enrolled right now in the classified to credential pathway. And that has cycled through, and where's Kristen? I think we've gone through our second group already. So we're looking at our existing employees, upskilling them to become teachers if they choose with scholarship money. We also had the first person in this county in the bilingual education grant that we received for our county, Kern, and Santa Barbara. We partnered with all three. The first person through our cohort finished and obtained the bilingual credential. These are for existing employees that may want to move to bilingual certification. There are funds for that. So again, apprenticeship for adults. And then finally, just a week ago, we received notification from the California Department of Ed that we were fully funded. I requested for $8 million to move forward with training individuals in special education. And just word of mouth from your HR directors and your superintendents throughout the county, we have 15 people that have already expressed interest in our county about becoming certified in special education. The nice thing about this most recent grant, they do not have to be our current employees. So we can recruit anywhere. The concept is if we grow our own in this county, we're more likely to retain them as employees. So those are a few of the things. If you look at apprenticeship, moving all the way up through our grades, partnering with Cuesta and Poly, Full Stack Academy, to try and keep young people in our community. That the last thing we want to become is, no offense to Carmel, but if you look at Carmel, everyone that works there drives in from Salinas or Monterey. We want to be a community where people can live and work and retire and raise families, all of those things together. So that has been a goal. We're continuing to look at potentials for workforce housing with the property. And the county office doesn't have a lot of money. We have land. So we're exploring avenues right now for potential workforce housing for public employees on some of the property that, that borders Highway 1, working on that. And I wanted to also just share a little clip with Grizzly Academy is celebrating over 20 years now of service to the community. And you can hear it for yourself. Go ahead. A little loud.
When my son started, this was his idea. He said, I'm at the end. I don't have any more choices. I'm running out of opportunities. I'm running out of, I don't know what to do anymore.
None of my family wanted to talk to me, so that's when I kind of realized I had to do something. If you're a Grizzly, nobody gives up on you. They don't let you fail. So, you know, I think, honestly, like, the best thing I've ever done in my life.
I want to go to college and get a career and give my son a good future. And I can't wait to see my dad's face because I know he's going to be proud of me.
We're here to help them transform themselves. We're here to help them have a new outlook in life and a new future for themselves.
The more I wanted to leave, the more the program made me stay.
I've been sober for like the first time in 2 years, and it's like the best thing I've ever gone through in my life. I have a relationship with my parents. My mom talks to me, you know. For the first time, like, I feel happy.
Really have to, like, just follow through. They tell you you're a good to really change you.
The transformation and the shift changes to where they're self-confident, they're capable of doing it, and everybody around them is helping them along the way to succeed.
I'd love to thank Grizzly for all the time. It's a great program, making my way up to a master mechanic, and then most importantly, it helped give me a job afterwards.
My son, he was going the wrong direction. Next thing you know, we're here, and we're here now, and I think I'm the proudest dad. I can really say that.
So, Grizzly, as you can see, really serves individuals that are at risk, the students that can fall through the cracks. Our first year out, the success rate, and Dr. Prater sat on the board twice now, I think. Are they trying to rope you into it again, aren't they? That's why you didn't show up to the last Superintendent's Council meeting. You're afraid we might ask you for that. Yeah. about 92% success rate the first year, meaning the students stay out of trouble with law enforcement, and they're continuing either with employment or their education. And in the second year, it drops to about 86%. They are followed with a mentor for 2 years. To keep them in the community. The biggest challenge we've had is the cadets are asking to remain post-program on base. And it is not a direct recruitment for military. I believe the enrollment in military is less than 10%. It's around 4 or 5% of the students that matriculate into the service. We were fortunate this year to get both federal and state funding for the three Youth Academy campuses, that one in Orange County, ours, and then in Stockton. The Orange County campus now has a limited number of post-residential slots. So those students that are requesting not to return to the environment in which they were struggling have a place to go and at least move through the community college ranks and complete. Now, only 100 slots for all three schools, but it's a step in the right direction for moving these individuals forward, becoming productive members of society. So a few of the things going on, and then the last, I just wanted to update you on a few things you've seen around the county with the budgets. You probably are aware that I've had to step into Pastor Robles and assist them at this point in time, and I'm very pleased that Dr. Crocker agreed to come out of retirement and assist as the interim while we search for a new superintendent for Paso Robles. With Cambria and Cayucas, Scott Smith was approved as a joint superintendent over both districts for the remainder of this year when Dr. Schumacher decided to retire. So that's a positive right there. And then we have had three school districts in which I had to ask for resolutions regarding their finances, Templeton, Shandon, and Paso Robles. So their boards had to pass spending reduction resolutions. You're going to notice that the letters that come to you from my office may have a little stronger language than they had previously. The state has upticked the expectation on counties to really look at school districts' fiscal picture and to be a little more directive, not scripting the type of spending changes, but spelling it out a little more black and white. So not necessarily yours, because you have a fairly healthy reserve. However, some of the school districts, it says you need to reduce your spending by X and pass a resolution. So those are a few of the things going on. Again, my cautionary tale on your upticking cost in pension liability, that even though you read one article and it says windfall for schools, then you read the next article and it says half of our school districts are looking at fiscal challenges across the state. Be very cautious of that. The increased cost for STIRS and PERS is looming out there, even with the COLA. It's not even a wash. We're still sort of behind the eight ball on that one. So just be careful. Questions? Anything that, Eric, that you'd like me to cover that I haven't? Or
Mr. Buckman?
So, Jim, this isn't so much of a question as a thank you. I think that you're going out to the districts and the publication and doing things. This is a really nice sign of transparency, and I really appreciate it. Also, I also want to say one of the things that I like most about Grizzly, and I did get to serve on that board for a while, is, and I thought it was missing here, so I just thought I'd mention it, is the community service.
Right.
And I think it's really important for the students, but I think it's also really important for this community to see that here are these kids, tough situations, and they are just totally responsible and capable of doing that kind of stuff.
The businesses are requesting them to return. So at the end of their 20 weeks, they have a time when they're going out and actually working in the community. And we have to take a waiting list on that.
And so I'm also talking about it, all the community events, is that what we're talking
right.
about? Yeah, it's just great.
Same thing. We have a queue on, okay, you're not on the list for the community service, not just the employment piece. So the setup for events, and it is nice to see the cadets out there. They do a great job. Yeah. Any other questions? Or
no, I'd like to thank you for, I think, the work you're doing in terms of we're very fortunate in our county to have so many alternatives with the CTE, with Grizzly, with the other campuses. I also think that the grant for special educators, when there's such a need throughout the county, will really help all the schools in the county. We're really seeing an increased need in that regard.
We've been looking at collective efforts. We tend to forget that if you look at the 35,000 school-age children, we're about the size of Santa Clara Unified as an entire county. When we work together, we are stronger.
Yes. Mrs. Roger?
Thank you. Dr. Brescia, I want to thank you for the efforts that you have put in and your community partners in creating and Ticket Into Tech and continuing to promote it. I have a family member that is a participant, and
great.
I am very appreciative of that. And also, with regard to Grizzly, I can never think of Grizzly without thinking of Gay Galvin and wanting to thank her for her efforts in bringing that program to, you know, to life for us. My daughter is a guide at Hearst Castle. One of the things that the Grizzly classes do as a sort of a treat is to have an experience going up to Hearst Castle, and they are always the best behaved, the most polite, conscientious, helpful group that goes through, and the guides all talk about it. So I just thought I would pass that on to you when I had the opportunity.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, we're very proud of the program. I want to thank all of you as trustees as well for your service. I believe education is social justice, and when you serve as a governing board, it's local community in action here, and I truly appreciate it. Ellen and Chris, also for your support with boards throughout the county. We've started a board mentoring program for new trustees coming on to districts to really assist school districts that may or may not have the opportunity to fully engage with CSBA at the level that some of our larger districts are able to. Specifically, if you look at, you know, our rural districts, Shandon, Pleasant Valley, San Miguel, it is a challenge for those small districts to receive the type of professional development that you have as commonplace here in this district. So I appreciate your help there, and we're moving forward. Any other questions?
Yeah, I just want to echo many of the things that I've heard, Jim. You've done a really good job bringing us together as a county. And two things. I really appreciate the networking session at CSBA in December this year. You did a really nice job of initiating that. So I had a great conversation with multiple different board members and superintendents from across this county. And it was really thought-provoking, and I felt by the end of that session that I knew our county much better. And then secondarily, I just want to comment, this club I work out in, there's this young man who's frequently, you know, in my area, and we were talking, really nice young man, he seemed so much more excited as of the last month or so. I said, so what's that light in your eye? And he said, well, I'm in this program through the county where I've been accepted in this program where I'm coding. And and do you know Dr. Brescia from San Luis County?
Never heard of him.
Yeah. So no, never heard of him. But I wanted you to say the word is out there, and
well, thank you.
And it's changing lives.
We're trying, and we want to keep young people in this community. We're also working collectively on some of the challenges we have. One of our districts was served recently with the territory issues that our cities faced and having to look at. And so we're collectively engaging Mike Smith to work on behalf of all of the districts in the county to provide information out there. So that's one of the things we do. Our trustee dinner coming up next month for superintendents and presidents. Mike Smith is our guest speaker in that. So really the things we can do together collectively when we meet with Assemblyman Carbajal, our Congressman Carbajal and Assembly Member Cunningham, Senator Monning, we try to do that together. I'm arranging for our new state superintendent to come and visit when he's in the area. But again, bringing the group together collectively. So thank you for your service. Thank you for serving the community of San Luis Coastal. And if we don't have any other questions, I'm going to go home to dinner.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Good night.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have correspondence. I don't know that the board received any correspondence after the posting of the agenda to all of us. So nothing to report. Next, we have public comment. This is for items at this time. You may speak to an item that is on the agenda or is not. You may wait until the item arises on the agenda if you wish. If you have a general comment, now's your time. Anyone wishing to speak before the board is given an opportunity at this time. The presentation should be as brief as possible, no longer than 3 minutes. We have a counter that Mrs. Campbell will be keeping track of as you speak. If you have materials that you wish to distribute, you may use the document camera to display them. You may hand things out. The board will not take any action on any item introduced during public comment, as this would constitute an illegal act on the part of the board. A speaker may offer criticism of school operations and programs, but we will not hear personal complaints of school personnel or complaints against any employee of the system. There are other channels and procedures in place to handle those. We request that you fill out a yellow speaker form and hand it to Mrs. Campbell, who will then get it to Mrs. Roger, and I see that Mrs. Roger has one now.
I do have one, and I ask forbearance on my pronunciation here. Marika Van Buren?
Yes, you did it right.
Yeah.
Okay. You got it.
Welcome.
Hi, and Happy New Year to everybody. My name is Marika Van Buren, and I've been attending the school board meetings for the last year and a half as a liaison to Mayor Heidi Harmon, as most of you have seen me. And her goal is to really, with this position, is to build a relationship between the City of San Luis Obispo City Council and the school district by having a liaison like myself attend the meetings and be able to share any significant community affairs with her and the council. Heidi and Dr. Prater have been corresponding recently in talks to formalize this relationship. So we would welcome any comments and thoughts from the board or the public about this subject. So we just wanted to let you guys know that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for coming. All right. Anyone else wishing to address the board at this time? Seeing no one, we will move on to our superintendent's updates. First, we have our business and budget update.
I don't know if anybody has noticed, but PG&E, it looks like, is declaring bankruptcy, which, of course, is a subject matter for our school district that is of vital importance in many different ways, first being the unitary tax that we receive from the plant. And so we have spoke, Julie Lang, as well as myself, have spoke with the county to see what impacts is this going to have on the district. So really two things that came out of it. One was the question about our unitary tax, and it does look like even through Chapter 11 bankruptcy that we should still receive our unitary tax. The question is kind of what happens when PG&E goes into bankruptcy, and when do they have to pay those taxes? Will it be a year from now, another, 2 years from now, those types of things? And so for us, that's significant because our March kind of unitary tax that we just talked to the county about is about $4.5 million. So a significant issue for the district in terms of what role this is going to play for us. And, of course, we have to have a certain amount of cash flow within our school district to make sure that we pay our employees and pay our bills and those types of things. So it's just very important to know. So we hope to. We've reached out. I've seen some kind of some verbiage in the Telegram Tribune about PG&E and that they say they're going to continue to pay their taxes, but again, once a bankruptcy judge comes into play, what truly is going to happen at that point. So we'll have to see what happens, but we will definitely be digging into that. We are fortunate in that it looks like the mitigation settlement will continue to go through despite the PG&E bankruptcy, and mainly because, as Dr. Prater kind of talked to our foundation's board yesterday, the fact that it was a law that was passed. So because of Senator Monning and Assemblyman Cunningham putting that through and getting it signed by the governor, that had this just gone through with PG&E approval or the PUC, we might not be receiving those funds. We'd be a creditor just like, you know, many other people that are going to be going for. So actually kind of fortunate. At the time, we didn't realize how fortunate it would be, but very fortunate for that to have been a law that was passed. And so hopefully that's something that will help us both on the foundation end as well as our district moving forward into the future, especially in light of this potential unitary tax issue. Governor Newsom, outside of that, I should also say, too, that it will be interesting to see what PG&E tries to do about the nuclear power plant's depreciation value. So in this bankruptcy proceeding, because, again, it's based on the value of the plant. That's how much unitary tax we receive on that portion, which is a large portion of our unitary tax. So, you know, our hope is that, again, that we have that transition, that the plant continues to run until 2425, and, you know, we can kind of work with the loss in unitary tax over a longer period of time. This year alone, if you look at, like, the 10-year budget, it's over $5 million. That represents in ongoing, you know, funds for us next year, 4.6. So if something were to happen to the plant, we would be faced with a, you know, with a difficult issue that we would have to deal with. Fortunately, the boards had the foresight to have a bigger reserve that will help us through those times. Now the mitigation funds will help, but it will definitely have an effect, you know, if for some reason the plant, again, depreciates quicker than we imagine, or if it continues to or cease working, basically, or be shut down. So we'll keep the board, keep the public abreast of what's going on and our conversations, what we hear and find out, as well as all of our staff to make sure that everybody knows, you know, as much as we can as we move forward. The other thing is Governor Newsom, our new governor, has come on and has put out a new state budget. And so there's some, you know, optimism, I would say, on his behalf that he's looking at it again, another great year. The economy's doing great in California. Things look good. Has that kind of same feel as Governor Brown? I think he's seen Governor Brown kind of have a good tenure, and people have kind of a positive view about his budgetary policies and practices. And so it looks like Governor Newsom is trying to keep that same kind of, you know, celebrate what we have, but also be cautious about the coming recession that might come forward. So he talked about a few things that are, for us are good as a basic kid school district, community funded district, and that is it looks like he is going to sell school bonds, unlike Jerry Brown, Governor Brown. And even there's also a couple of bills that are going through right now in the legislature to increase the amount of school bonds that will be available in the future. So for us, as we found, even with our own school bond, you know, prices are exorbitant. They're out of control in terms of trying to get things accomplished and within budget. So any money that we can receive from these CTE grants, from modernization funds, from other potential building funds, the charter funds for Bellevue Santa Fe, you know, we're trying to get whatever we can to make sure that we have enough money to get all those projects completed in time. So having a governor that's supportive of that, and having our legislature, one of them being Assemblyman Cunningham, who's pushing forward more bills to increase that amount that's available to school districts, is very, very important. They estimate that, I think within the next 10 years, there's a need with all the school districts of over $100 billion. I mean, that's what we're talking about in terms of aging infrastructure throughout the state for our schools. So very, very exciting to hear him talk about that. You know, Governor Brown, over the past few years, with the extra money that the state had, instead of having ongoing expenses, gave one-time money to schools. That was great for us as a community-funded school district because we received those as well. It looks like in lieu of just giving school districts money to go towards their mandated cost, former debt that school districts have, that Governor Newsom is looking at putting that towards pensions and pension relief. So, hey, we'll take anything that they want to put forward. As Dr. Brescia talked about tonight, it is, you know, for us, we've been frugal. We've cut back over the last few years to kind of maintain and been fortunate with property tax values, but a lot of school districts are suffering mightily because of those STRS and PERS increases. So that'll be a welcome relief on behalf of the governor if he's able to get that accomplished. Of course, you don't know for sure until the budget's actually signed and we see how things move forward. So some positive things that have come out so far in terms of the governor. So excited about some of those. And the last thing would also increase in some CTE spending. So there's the potential that those grants, and we're seeing a lot of a lot of materials and supplies and machinery and things that are really ramping up and making those programs, as Dr. Bresch talked about tonight, really influential and impactful for our students.
So one of the things that I read about the closure of the plant was the possibility of PG&E selling the plant to a decommissioning specialist. We probably haven't looked at that, but is that one of those things that would affect the plant depreciation and depreciate the plant more rapidly, or is it based on the actual closure of the plant and its ceasing generating electricity?
Yeah, and at this point, I don't know. Okay. It's too soon to kind of know, but yeah, excellent question.
Okay, anyone else? Okay. All right, next is our educational services update.
Great, thanks. As you know, we were selected this year for a federal program monitoring review, and I just want to say a thanks to Rick Mayfield as he's walking into this position as Director of Learning and Achievement, walked into that lovely surprise, and it really dominates your time and is a lot of back and forth with people asking about a million literal specific questions. So you will hear the findings of that tonight, and just wanted to say a big thanks to Rick for taking that on and doing it well. The second thing, just wanted to give everyone an update that we are looking towards a common communication tool. Right now we use School Messenger for kind of robocalls and a few emergency type of things, but we don't have a modern system that looks at different types of ways to create two-way communication with our parents. And a couple of the tools that we're looking at really have some amazing features that allow a lot of back and forth two-way communication to be able to provide even additional parent engagement. So we have a group going that's been looking at them, a few schools piloting a few different programs, and we seem to be starting to kind of narrow it down. The group meets again coming up this week, so I'm really looking forward to a common tool that we could work towards. It would mean getting rid of some of the kind of pieces that we have here and there. Some schools have a little bit of Remind or a little bit of this and that, and instead putting together one common tool that would allow a family, especially as you have students in multiple schools, to have a common communication platform that they could hear from their teachers and from their principal, etc. So I'm excited about what that could do for us as a school district. Also, Christine Robertson, our foundation executive director, has been in place 1 week, and so happy to have her here. We had a foundation board meeting today as well, really made some great progress. A task force was adopted in order to look at learning grants and kind of start to put some detail around what could learning grants look like for the foundation. So exciting progress there.
Thank you. All right, and our next item is Measure D update.
It's raining.
It is.
Yes, which is good for construction,
yeah.
Let me tell you, and especially building a pool.
Yeah.
Everything's moving forward. I heard the board had an excellent trip, hopefully. With Mr. Bonin and Mr. Holcomb last Thursday to kind of see Bellevue Santa Fe. Did they have the sod in? Was there a new sod in at Bellevue Santa Fe?
Okay,
excellent,
yes,
excellent.
Was.
So that
was
good. It's nice to see some projects now being completed for people to see kind of the effort, the work that goes into it. Again, Sales Smith looks beautiful, right? They finished some work at Pack Beach, right, in the middle area there. Bellevue Santa Fe, which we'll have our end of our lease there tonight. San Luis High, a couple of great programs. But I'm really looking forward to the DSA approval for our design build projects coming up, and kind of what the bidding is going to be like for those projects, because it won't have that the need to have the skilled and trained workforce. There's still skilled workers, there's still union workers that are part of the jobs, but the pool's not as limited when we move forward with those. So I'm hoping that we're going to get some more competition, and that's going to help us in terms of getting all of our projects completed.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Next on the agenda is item 8.01, resolution number 11-18-19, Measure D, Mr. Pinkerton.
So as we discussed, Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School, we received matching funds for that project that included new classrooms as well as kind of remodeling of their main office area and restrooms. We'll be completing the asphalt portion of the campus this summer. They couldn't, after all the construction they've been through, they couldn't handle one more project during the school year, so they want to do it during the summer and hold off, even though it doesn't look great. So we definitely said we could do that and move forward. For Mrs. Frain, just to understand, so the leaseback project is a construction delivery method. So it's a way to basically choose contractors. In the past, there were some issues with leaseback contractors in that it was very non-competitive. And school districts actually got into trouble because they were moving forward with projects without going through the proper etiquette of putting it out to bid, getting people to design, those types of things. Well, fortunately, the state and legislature kind of put some information forward, which made it something that we could move forward on with the new rules and laws. And so with this project, we actually put it out to bid, so everything from general conditions to profit margins and all of those were put through a competitive process. So in this case, it was Wison Construction that won that bid for this project, and we entered into a lease where you actually lease the ground at the school site. They come on, even though there's school going on, those types of things. They do the work, and then after they're done, over a period of time, you actually end the lease, and then we take back ownership of the property. And so there's three things tonight that you're going to see on the board agenda. The first one is a resolution that the board has to pass in order for us to get out of that lease. And then there's two more notice of completion as well as another basically ending the lease itself later on in the agenda where I'll come back up and speak to those items. So the first one is for us to ask the board to pass a resolution, which basically completes the lease now that the project has been completed at Bellevue Santa Fe.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address us on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Any questions, comments for Mr. Pinkerton? If none, then I would entertain a motion with regard to the resolution. Mr. Unger?
I move approval of Resolution 11-18-19, Agreement for Termination of Leases and Quick Claim Deed for Bellevue Santa Fe New Construction and Modernization Leaseback Project.
And I'll second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. This would be a roll call vote.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Millar? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Resolution passes 7-0.
Thank you. All right. Our next, we're moving on to the discussion action portion of our program here this evening. And first up is appointing board members to committees and liaison posts. And I think the way I'd like to do this, if the board will indulge me, is to go through each one. I know that Dr. Prater gave some recommendations, kind of see where we stand with these. So your light is on. Dr. Prater, the first on the list is the Central California Schools Financing Authority.
Yes, this is a joint powers authority for the relationship between San Luis Coastal and Lucia Mar, which manages the property taxes shared between the two school districts for the Varian Ranch Price Canyon properties. One board member from each district serves as a representative. There are generally 1 to 2 meetings annually. I recommend that we maintain this board member participation to ensure compliance with the JPA agreement guidelines.
Okay, and what I'd like to do is first check with the people who are presently serving in this capacity to see if they continue to have an interest in so serving. So, Mr. Millar, you are our representative. Is this something you wish to do, to continue?
Well, I've been doing this so long that it's like I have a preemptive easement. So I'm happy to continue. It is
such a burden.
One, the lowest workload things you can volunteer for, which has nothing to do with why I volunteered for it. Back when I first started, it was far more complicated. You had to drive to Lucia Mar.
Oh, my gosh.
For the 10-minute meeting.
It's because conference calls weren't invented yet.
Anyway, it's a great idea. It was a great idea. It's over time, the revenues we've split up have decreased, but it was a great idea. Then and it still is, and I'd be happy to continue if anyone else is interested. I will not have my feelings hurt.
Okay, it is beneficial to the board. Is there anyone else interested in that? Then I would. We need to vote on each of these. So if someone would nominate Mr. Millar to this position, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I would like to nominate Walt Millar for this position. Doing such a good job.
I'll second.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations, aye. Mr. Millar. You are maintaining your seat on that. The SLO County School Boards Association, Dr. Prater.
Yes, this group is charged with acting on matters of common concern and issues required by law. And of particular note in our past, it was about school district reorganization. Well, I think we've resolved that with our recent agreement with Cayucas and Coast. So while that's no longer an issue, it doesn't mean other issues won't emerge in our county. So given that, I would recommend that we maintain board participation to ensure clear communication between all county school districts on issues of common concern.
Right. I presently serve in that capacity. I am willing to continue to do so. I believe it does have even a lower responsibility or time commitment than the group Mr. Millar serves on. But if I'm happy to continue to do that unless anyone else is chomping at the bit. Seeing no one, it requires a nomination.
I would nominate Ellen Sheffer to continue in her excellent representation of the district.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Millar, Mr. Buckman. I know that last year I actually had to check and see who was on that committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I will continue in that role. Our interest-based bargaining liaisons, we have two. Dr. Prater?
The district utilizes the interest-based bargaining model with two of its employee unions, CSEA and SEIU. A board member traditionally is a member of the district cadre and attends three or four meetings during the course of the negotiations year. The SLCTA does not utilize interest-based bargaining with our district. So right now we have CSEA open and Mrs. Roger serving as our long-term SEIU representative.
Right.
And my recommendation is we maintain this model.
All right. So we do have an open seat for the CSEA rep. I'd like to first check and see if there is any interest by anyone on the board to serve on that.
If none of my fellow board members would like to do it, I'll be happy to step in.
All right. And then I would so nominate Mr. Buckman in that position. We need a second.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, and then SEIU, Mrs. Roger. Oh, Chris. Mrs. Roger, you are currently serving as our representative to SEIU. Is that a position you wish to maintain?
I've served in that position for so long. How long has it been? I don't know exactly, but I think if somebody else showed up, they'd all fall over. But
we don't want that.
Most of the people who have been negotiating in behalf of SEIU have now retired, and I am the only person left. But I enjoy that, and I would be pleased to continue.
All right. Then we need a motion.
If I may, I would just suggest that there's value in Maryland's organizational historical knowledge, and that I think it would probably benefit the SEIU group to have you continue on in that role, so I will nominate Marilyn Roger.
Thank you for recognizing her years of service in that capacity. Is there a second? And Dr. Eisendrath Rogers seconds. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Next, we have the Tri-County Education Coalition.
Yes, this organization is composed of representatives from the California Central Coast counties of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. I've actually had the opportunity to go to a couple of their meetings to observe, and they're usually meetings with very important topics, relevant topics like school safety, immigration, impacts of immigration policy on our students, and among other things. And so it identifies common education concerns and interests among these groups and organizations in the Tri-County area. And my recommendation is that we maintain board participation on the TCEC and remain active in the broader conversations impacting our school districts in the three counties.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman is presently serving in that organization. Are you interested in continuing to do so?
So, as Mr. Millar has been doing his position so long, and Marilyn, I was back in the 80s, I was one of the founding members and organizers of this group, so I would be very interested in maintaining this position.
All right. Any competition for that position? All right. Then we need a motion and a second, please.
So moved.
Mr. Unger?
I'll second.
Thank you. And second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Next is our Board Policy Subcommittee.
This is a new addition to the Council of Committees, and it was created out of need, out of necessity, because we were accumulating board policy revisions and never quite finding a system to bring them forward to the board without overwhelming the board in terms of timelines. So we created a system which was a board subcommittee on policy review, and this aligns with the whenever GAMET, which is our CSBA policy agency that alerts us when laws have changed and we need to update our policies. So in 2017, the board instituted a subcommittee of two who work with the Assistant Superintendent of Ed Services, that's Kimberly McGrath, to review the CSBA policy recommendations prior to those coming before the full board for decisions. The subcommittee meets on an as-needed basis. My recommendation is to maintain the board member participation, as it allows district staff to maintain a consistent practice of updating board policies recommended by GAMET, and it streamlines the reading of the materials.
And currently, Mr. Buckman and I serve on this subcommittee. I am willing to go another year, especially in light of the work with the federal program monitoring. I know that has required some board policy revisions and close looks in it to align with what their expectations are. So I'm willing to continue on that. Mr. Buckman?
I'm also willing to continue, and just all the changes that are coming, the focus now on public education, on equity. There's going to be a lot of stuff coming down the pike, and I think Ellen and I have made a great team.
Definitely.
All right. We need to be so elected by the board, so we need a...
I move that the board policy subcommittee be Mark Buckman and Ellen Sheffer.
Do we have a second? Thank you, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. We're getting there. Next is our healthcare committee.
This committee stemmed out of the Blue Ribbon Committee recommendations for us to look at ways to address increased and ongoing funding or expenditures in our district. And one of those areas beyond STRS and PERS is healthcare in our district. And so we are the only district in San Luis Obispo County that has a what they call floating cap. So we bear, as a district, we bear the burden of those increases, as do our employees. And it is an issue that needs to be looked at and addressed. And we believe that creating a committee and hiring a consultant, an expert consultant, to help us through this would help us see if there are ways that we could find efficiencies in our healthcare program. So because of that, in the summer of 2018, led by Kristen Newland, SLCUSD created a healthcare committee to evaluate and identify potential efficiencies in our employee options and costs. This committee was composed of representatives from every employee group in the district, including a board representative. The committee met several times throughout the fall, although that would not be the case moving forward. I should have drilled a little deeper on my recommendation, because after speaking with staff and really looking at this, my initial recommendation was to discontinue this healthcare committee almost as an ad hoc. However, in looking at where we're at as a district and where this committee's knowledge has come along with the work of the consultants, it is my recommendation that we maintain this for at least another year, because we might need to reconvene if we are negotiating with our employee groups and or need further work in this area as we go into the following year. It might be helpful to continue this committee moving forward. It's a very steep learning curve. This group has spent a lot of time learning about the different healthcare options. So I believe, given all that energy and all that time, it might be worthwhile to continue this committee for at least one more year. So my recommendation is to do that.
May I ask sort of more of a question? I was wondering if Mrs. Frame would be interested in this position, since there's no one actually seated in that position.
Well, I'm on that committee. I'm the board's representative, and I would only say that, you know, I just learned the jargon. I'm happy if someone else would like to do it, but I do feel that the learning curve was, as Dr. Prater pointed out, really steep. But if someone else would like to take it over, that's. Pardon me?
I'm happy.
Okay. Then I'm happy to continue in that role.
Well, in that case, I'll nominate
Ellen Sheffer to continue on the Healthcare Committee.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Next is our San Luis Coastal Education Foundation.
You're an extraordinarily busy board.
Yes, we are.
And here is another example of a committee assignment that involves monthly meetings and then some. And out of the Blue Ribbon Committee's recommendations that we pursue an education foundation, we were fortunate, as you all know, to receive SB 1090 and the approval from the PUC. So now this foundation will over a period of 5 years, receive $10 million that will be dedicated in perpetuity towards our kids. This foundation will be that agency that does that, and we are still finding our feet. We are moving forward. It's very exciting. Currently Dr. Eisenreth Rogers is the representative on that committee. We just had another meeting today, and it was complicated. There was a lot going on today. So given that, my recommendation is that we maintain board member participation on this foundation board. I would also suggest a minimum of 2-year term for this particular committee, with an option to renew at the end of the term to ensure consistency. There's within that foundation board, there are committees and task force. Mm-hmm. So while this is Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' only committee assignment, believe me, it's a massive assignment. So that would be my recommendation.
I would like to just jump in on this one and state that I think that Dr. Eisendrath Rogers is the perfect fit for this particular committee. I really appreciate her service. I know it has been a great deal of time, and it's a time when the consistency, I believe, is crucial in getting this off the ground. You will be instrumental in helping to guide the future of this very important foundation and organization. So if I would like to make a motion that Dr. Eisendrath Rogers continue and for the minimum 2-year term as suggested, with an option to renew at the end of that time if you remain so interested.
Thank you. I'd be honored to do so.
We are honored to have you.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Last but not least is our Somos Coastal Equity Team Committee. Dr. Prater.
Yes, the board priorities that were established this last fall and really were built upon the foundation of the 10 strategic initiatives back from 2011. The focus is on equity. And to that end, we created a District Equity Team Committee led by Mr. Mayfield. And this committee was established to build district-wide capacity and understanding around equity and how it impacts our students, staff, and community. The equity team has staff and community representation along with 2 board representatives. This committee meets monthly throughout the year. And my recommendation is that we maintain board member participation on the District Equity Team Committee. I would suggest a minimum 2-year term with an option to renew at the end of the term to ensure consistency and to build expertise.
All right, thank you. I see that currently Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Rogers serving on that equity team committee. Are you each still interested in remaining in that role? Mr. Buckman, I see you nodding. Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I would question the minimum 2-year term. Are you including the year that has already, so not 2 years going forward?
That's right. I would mean you've been on this 1 year now, so I would suggest 2 years, which at the end of next year you would have served 2 years. Yeah.
Okay. I have interest. I have tremendous interest in this committee work, although I believe that we have only met a few times, and I think that I have not made... I've only made 1 of the meetings. Mr. Buckman, can you refresh me on how many meetings we've had of that committee?
We've had 3.
3? Okay. Well, I would renew my commitment to this committee and hope to be a better attendee going forward.
All right. Then I would like, please, a motion that they continue as well as the 2-year term, to include the 2-year term. I will so move that Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger continue serving on this committee with a 2-year term with an option to renew at the end of that term.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. So that gets us through our committees. Thank you, everyone, for serving in so many, giving up your time and expertise to serve in other areas as well. Mr. Mayfield, you've been with us all evening and been so quiet. So now it's your turn. 9.0.
Working away in the back.
Working away. Now it's time for our elementary achievement report and cohort data.
All right. I have actually 4 separate presentations to do. The first is on our elementary fall data. And this is trimester 1 data, which was compiled by teachers about November and shared out with parents in parent conferences. Benchmark assessments are an important and integral part of teaching and learning, along with high-quality instruction, rigorous curriculum, and professional development. We do these so that we have the ability to adjust our teaching as we move through the year, and we know what students are able to do, and we can adjust interventions and keep them on track. It also gives us common expectations
working towards a rigorous curriculum that's equally rigorous across the district. It allows collaboration across sites and also helps us to expedite our professional development as we can do that district-wide. Benchmarks also match our single plan for student achievement goals and our LCAP goals as well. And then most of the assessments, except for the SRI, reading assessment at third to sixth grade, are curriculum embedded. Okay, so for reading, we'll first look at kindergarten through second grade. This is the BAS, or Benchmark Assessment System, assessment. This is a one-on-one teacher-student assessment. The amount of time that you put in, which is a lot for this assessment, gives you a better result out. You get to know exactly where that student is in time. The light green bars there are students who met the first trimester benchmark, and the dark green ones at the top is the percentage of students who met the end of the year benchmark already. So as you can see, it's been fairly consistent, a little growth over time, fewer students in the category of not meeting the first trimester benchmark. This breaks it down into our different groups. We have the entire district at the top of the graph. Non-socioeconomically disadvantaged is the second line down. SED, the third, English learner, redesignated fluent, and then students with disabilities at the bottom. Scholastic reading inventory is a test that students take online in a computer lab. It's interactive, reactive to how the student is doing as they're taking the test. It's not as reliable as a benchmark assessment system. We primarily use it as a screening tool to find out which students then need further work and to look into their reading abilities. And you can see that the results have basically maintained over time. I would say it's a difficult assessment for some students. And it's delivered in Spanish at Pacheco Elementary, but they don't have an online component, so it's done paper and pencil. And then these are the different subgroups broken out here in the same order as the previous slide. You can see that our English learner group has a difficult time with this particular assessment. Our redesignated students do quite well. In writing, we've done a lot. We've had the writing program around for a long period of time. In fact, I believe the sixth graders this year were in kindergarten, the first year of our writing program. So you can really see that teachers have expertise in writing. And we did a lot of great professional development early on, collaborating and getting teachers on the same page in terms of scoring writing. And I think that's one of the reasons why we see such a gain here. In our writing scores. And again, we break it out by all the normal subgroups that we have here. And in writing, surprisingly, it seems like writing is more difficult than reading, but our English learners do better in the writing assessments than they do on the SRI reading assessments. Okay, in mathematics, we see similar types of results. You know, it's slow improvement, slow growth over time. That's one of our mantras, is that we don't want to see big spikes in our data. We want to see slow growth over time, and that shows that we're making progress and the work that we're doing is effective. And what we see there is that shrinking, smaller group of students who are not yet there approaches the mark is 50 to 75%. Meets or exceeds is 75% and above on the end of trimester assessments in math. There's all the subgroups, and even English learners are at 79%, which is fantastic. Okay, so again, slow growth over time. That's the mantra with this data. Solid three-year growth in all curricular areas, very strong in growth in writing. And as I mentioned previously, sixth grade started writer's workshop
in kindergarten. So they've been at it for 7 years now with Writers Workshop, which is fantastic. The data is reviewed with grade level teams at December planning days. So all grade levels meet at sites and review this data. And we also look at our intervention groups and adjust the data based on benchmark results in reading, writing, and math. And we have a continuing collaboration in writing in the BAS, and we keep the focus on students not meeting benchmark. So a lot of our discussions always have that as an element of it. What are we doing with students who are not meeting the benchmark, and making sure that we have students plugged into interventions at sites who are not meeting our benchmarks.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board on this item? All right, Mr. Buckman, I see your light on.
Thanks, Ellen. I just have to say how impressed I am with the students and then the staff. It's just, the accomplishments are just great, and we just see them year after year. So one of the questions that came to mind is we're seeing this growth. It seems to be slow and steady, which is a great mantra. But are we sometimes during the year then pushing the students a little harder as we see the 2% growth? Are we expanding the envelope a little bit? Is there a way to do that?
I think we are, and I would say especially with subgroups. You know, we're always looking at those students need more than a year's growth. The students who are below the mark, and they need that acceleration. And so we're always looking at ways that we can push those students. But I would say that's the case for all students. Teachers are very it's a lot of work. To do this and to do it correctly, but it gives them the feedback they need to know exactly where the students are, and that enables them to accelerate it just as fast as they can, knowing right where they are.
Okay, thank you. I see a lot. The order I have is Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, Mr. Millar, then Ms. Spring.
Thank you. Mr. Mayfield, I'm just, you know, sometimes we hear about some teachers' concern about the amount of time that the testing sure. takes vis-a-vis the information they get back from the test. And so I wonder if you could elaborate upon that a little bit and what the value ratio is.
Yeah. The ratio, I really, without the figures in front of me, I couldn't tell you about that. But that's an ongoing issue. You know, teachers do struggle to fit all of the curriculum within the day, the instructional day. And then when they look at what all the things that they're doing, they think, well, maybe I could make some cuts here and make some cuts there. As I shared in the first slide, I think that doing these benchmark assessments is an integral piece of the process and of the cycle, and it gives us feedback. And I think those four elements together have led to the growth that we've seen over time. And we do work with teachers, and we work on the assessments, and we discuss it at principals' meetings constantly as to how we can reduce these things and shift them around. We looked at BAS, for example. That was one of the first slides I shared several years back, and teachers were adamant that they wanted to keep that assessment on because it gives them the feedback that they need. But we continue to listen to what teachers have to say and take a look at where we can make adjustments.
Thank you for that explanation.
Mr. Millar.
Rick, it's a bit overlapping to the federal program monitoring, but I'm always amazed at the performance of the RFEP students. But of the three findings from the federal program monitoring, three of them had to do with the three all had to do with EL, and one of them dealt specifically with RFEP mm-hmm. and discussed whether or not there was sufficient objective criteria provided to teachers and staff in order to decide. So are we somehow not RFEPing properly?
I don't believe that to be the case. When we get to the FPM findings, I'll go over those individually, but really that's just a semantical change.
Okay.
And basically there are several elements to RFEP, and one of them is teacher input. And we had not stipulated exactly what scale or what numerical value teachers would use to give that input, and they asked for that.
Okay.
So we're going to include language that says something along the lines of, you know, students will have a 3 in all areas of language arts, and if they don't, then teachers will have an explanation as to why they feel students should still redesignate. But really, it was a semantical thing more than anything else.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Frame.
I just wanted to comment that, you know, this is really nice, solid growth in all areas in our district assessments. But I am, is this, you know, growth reflected in our SBAC scores, you know, against all subgroups? Because these are district assessments, and then we have the standardized assessments. And as I'm looking at next steps, you know, tweaking the next steps, so perhaps that solid growth, and, you know, particularly, you know, when we're looking at our ELs and they're doing so well, when we're looking at, you know, the SBAC, you know, how can we tweak that a little? You know, I'd be interested in that kind of conversation.
Great. Love to have it. We shared the SBAC data earlier in the school year, and we did quite well as a school district in comparison to the state and county averages. And we outperformed all of the districts within the county in all of the subgroup categories, non-SED, SED, EL, RFEP, and all students. And we're very proud of that growth. We've done a lot of work with interims over the last several years, which are tests, like practice tests that teachers can use for SBAC. The state provides interim exams that teachers can administer to students, and there are like actual previous questions that were on the SBAC exam, and it gives teachers and students an opportunity to interact with that material and see how it's going to be presented.
Okay, I guess what I'm also getting at is looking at the difference between kind of an ongoing dynamic assessment model, where it's kind of more informal, that gives directs teachers kind of you know, weekly what that instruction they need to tweak, so that potentially you know, accelerates, and perhaps putting more emphasis on that, and, you know, less on kind of district mandate assessments. Because I think that when we are giving those practice and those summative assessments, it's taking away actual instructional learning time, and that puts the squeeze on teachers, and it also means that students aren't learning as much. So just comment.
Right. What do they say? The pig doesn't get fatter by weighing it more frequently? Yeah, we can certainly take a look at that.
Thank you.
Farmers say that. I don't say that.
Thank you. That's okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
I think FFA says that.
Is that right? Yeah.
Mr. Buckman and Mr. Unger.
Thanks. In slide 7, we see the SRI results on reading. And a thought just, well, there's two things. One is that the difference just continues to boggle my mind between the non-socioeconomic disadvantaged and socioeconomically disadvantaged. So this would be slide 7. It would be the SRI.
That's it.
Reading, okay. And so that's just another just glaring example of the difference whether you have, your family has resources and you don't.
Right.
So that was to your comment about we need to make those bigger achievements. But in this, the thought just crossed my mind. There was a time when I remember that the comment was is that reading by third grade, one of the comments was the state prison system looks at third grade reading across the state and decides how many prison beds they need. And then the other statement was that if you haven't read, if you're not reading well by third grade, then your academic achievement's going to suffer. So is that still the common? Because I'm, you know, I'm looking at this is third to sixth students.
Yeah.
Is that still kind of the common thought out there?
Well, certainly the emphasis on interventions is K-2, K-3. I mean, we want to get those students early, and if we get them on track early, and there are not a lot of great interventions out there for fourth to sixth grade. In our principals' meetings today, we were talking about a couple of things related to this. Number one is this is not our favorite or preferred assessment. You know, it doesn't give a lot of quality feedback, and we do see a real difference between the K-2 BAS data and then the 3-6 SRI, a significant drop in the number of students at second grade who are proficient on the BAS, which is a quality assessment, and then the number of students that are proficient on SRI at third grade. So we are looking for other assessments that would be manageable and time efficient for teachers, but also give us quality feedback. Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Unger?
And I was just curious, one of the things you mentioned was the interim SBAC assessments. I believe that there were concerns about those and concerns about the the timeliness of the feedback that teachers were getting, have those things been resolved?
It's a work in progress. The interim assessments, Jen O'Hagan has done a great job of getting out and working with teachers on interim assessments. I think most who use them find them very helpful. And I think that, you know, it's not a matter of necessarily, you know, teaching to the test, but when the test is asking for high-quality interaction of reading and engaging reading, then it's a good activity to do within the classroom. So, you know, we're working on interims, and we're getting better and better at digging into those interims and getting quality input back from them for teachers.
Thank you.
All right. Looks like we're ready to move on to 9.03, the ST math.
Well, we have a second part of this is our cohort data.
Oh, and I'm
it's
so
a separate
sorry.
Presentation. That's all right. And I wanted to take a look. This is something that we've been talking about for a while, and it's been a desire of the board to see some cohort data. So, again, Jen O'Hagan, Mrs. McGrath, and I have worked together to kind of take a look at, and Darla Batistic, what cohort data might look like, how we can get that data, and it's a bit tricky, I will say, to you know, find a group of students and track them over a period of time and have them be the very same group of students. So we did that with three different groups, starting in the year 14-15 school year. The first cohort is a third grade group, so we have 4 years of test results. So that would be third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. The second group is a group of fifth graders. So they have fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. And then the eighth grade group has just eighth grade and 11th grade. And we'll share those results with you now. We have broken it out by all of our LCAP groups. And then we use the demographic data from 2015. So if a student, for example, was an English learner in 2015, they stayed in the English learner category throughout the cohort group, even if they redesignated. Okay, and if they started as a redesignated student, of course they stayed there. Same with socioeconomically disadvantaged or non. Whatever they were in that 15, spring of 15 assessment year, they remained in that group throughout the cohort moving forward. Okay, and so our elementary cohort in language arts, we see just tremendous growth. And, you know, we've been looking at this data and kind of trying to figure out, you know, the reasons for it. But if you draw a line from the lowest or oldest data, 2015 up through 2018, you see growth in every group moving forward. It's a little flat in the RFM group, but it's flat at 89%. So that's a flat we'll take, right? Our English learners, again, you know, they're making growth over time. And then the highest of those students are then redesignated as they move forward. In math, we see some fluctuation and certainly growth from the first year. But again, what I would do looking at this graph is I would draw a straight line from the very bottom bar to the top bar. And if you do that, then over the four-year period of time, you see growth other than the students with disabilities group. And that's an ongoing conversation with how we can move that student group forward in assessment. Okay, so in the elementary cohort, significant growth in English language arts for all groups, and math, growth in the first year, and then not much change after that. We've shared this data with principals, and we'll go further into that in the future. And then you know, the writing implementation is there on the right-hand side of the screen, 13-14. The reading units of study, 15-16, and Bridges Math in 14 and 15. And I mentioned this previously, but the rigorous and quality curriculum, along with well-done professional development and awesome teachers, is what gives us the data that we have. The middle school cohort, you see something similar in language arts. Again, drawing that line from the bottom bar to the top bar, we see growth there. In math, similar to the lower grades. One thing you note on this graph here is in seventh grade, the green bar, it's quite higher results than the eighth grade math. And that's because of the content in mathematics between seventh and eighth grade. Seventh is a continuation of the sixth grade mathematics, and eighth is an entirely different, and it's a big jump in level in terms of math. So I think that's the reason why you consistently see that seventh grade year higher than the eighth grade year, according to my math sources. Okay, so for our middle grade cohort in English language arts, again, significant growth in that first year, and then pretty stable after that, but not tremendous growth like we saw the first year. And then in math, significant growth over the four-year period of time, noting that RFEP students grew at a 31 percentage points. And next steps are the same. Dive further into the data to discuss it and review it with principals at meetings. And then our high school cohort is only 2 years. The students are assessed at eighth grade and then again at 11th grade, and that's it for the high school year. It gets complicated, SBAC testing at 11th grade, because there's a lot of reasons why students elect not to take the assessments at 11th grade. So like with all data, you just have to take it as, you know, one piece of information. And there are many factors to it. But we do see growth from the 8th grade year to the 11th grade year in all groups. And this is the math data for the same groups, flat for English learners, but growth for all other groups. Okay, so minimal growth over the four-year period for English language arts for the high school cohort. And again, there are a lot of reasons for that. And not significant growth in math for any of the groups, but I think that 11th grade SBAC is a significant thing, and I think it's a complicated thing, and I think there's a lot of high-level students electing not to take the SBAC in 11th grade. But this data will be discussed at principal meetings, and we'll dive into it further. As it mentions over there in the bottom right, SBAC is administered in grades 8 and 11, so there's only 2 years of data for that.
Thank you. All right.
So that's our first attempt at cohort data.
Thank you. I have Mr. Millar, Mr. Buckman, then Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Thank you. Excuse me. Besides the math transition change, are there any other curricular or pedagogical changes that would influence the reliability of the data, the cohort data?
Between 7th and 8th grade specifically?
No.
Mr. Millar?
In general.
Just the implementation of two different curriculums. You know, that students jump from in 5th grade Bridges curriculum to 6th grade CPM curriculum, which is a different curriculum, a little bit different approach. But other than that, no.
So essentially, you don't think that affects the fidelity of the data?
I don't. And okay. I think the implementation of those programs was close enough in time that it shouldn't make too much of a difference.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
Thanks. Rick, I really appreciate this, and I understand now. It isn't. I thought it maybe just was pushing a button, and it's obviously a great deal of work. But if you could just review for me and maybe others...
Sure.
Why this cohort data, how it's different, and maybe what value you would place on it as a teacher versus just the third
yeah.
grade did better than the fourth grade, but I would appreciate that.
Sure. So what we normally present is 1 year's data, you know, the current year's data, and then we look back at two other points in time, the previous year and the year prior to that. What cohort data does is follow the same group of students over a period of time to see if that group of students made growth. Because when you look at the all group, there can be students who left that group, students who are new to that group, so the group may change over time, especially with volatile groups like English learners, socioeconomically disadvantaged. But when you look at cohort data, you're looking at the exact same number of students for all four-year period of time, and that tells you what's going on programmatically in those areas that those students are
making the growth that they're making.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. You bet.
All right, Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers.
So I love this highlight and conclusion that very strong growth in writing in sixth grade started, these young people started writer's workshop in kindergarten. I have stars all around that one on my notes. And so I wanted you to just comment on that, on your thoughts about writer's workshop and how it prepares these students for a writing career.
I remember when we first introduced Lucy Calkins writing, and kindergarten teacher said, this is going to be so difficult for kids to do. It's like, yeah, it will be, and that's what we want. You know, we want not inappropriate curriculum, but we want our kids challenged. And to see their writing and to have gone to writing celebration after writing celebration over the years, it's just amazing the work that our teachers have done. Kindergarten through sixth grade, in all subject areas, but in the area of writing, we are especially strong as a school district, and I think that's because teachers embraced it. I think it's a genuine curriculum. I think it's a lot of fun. I think kids really like it. It also is very personal. You know, it asks the kids to write about their own opinions and experiences that they've had, and I think it's an excellent curriculum, and I think our teachers have done a phenomenal job of embracing it and teaching it over the year. I also think we had some really high-quality professional development early on where we pulled teachers out, and it was, again, a lot of time and difficult work, but I think you can see the results.
Yeah, it's there. Exciting to see that borne out in the data. Thank
it
you.
It is. You bet.
Okay, Mrs. Frame.
I just want to comment on that, your comment about the kindergarten teachers. I myself was one of those, right? I was one of those who looked at the curriculum, but I have been astounded at the writing that kindergartens can do. And, you know, it used to be we used to do journals, and they would write one sentence, and we would applaud that and celebrate. And now when you have kindergarten students coming up with personal narratives, and then they come up with informational genres, and then they come up with persuasive genres, and they are powerful. And then those genres follow them throughout. You know, the rubrics get a little more difficult, but it's endearing to see, you know, these powerful little writers in kindergarten.
It really is, yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger, then Mr. Millar.
So one of the concerns that I've heard about Writer's Workshop it is that it doesn't really attack mechanics. Can you talk to me a little bit about that, and what are we doing to work on the mechanics side of the writing?
I would say the emphasis is not on mechanics in Writer's Workshop. There's something called word work, which is also a part of our comprehensive literacy model, where teachers would spend some time looking at words and breaking it down and more into that kind of grammatical work. And looking at how words work. But I would say that it's not an emphasis of Writer's Workshop. It's more on volume, more on ideas, and children's ability to express their ideas.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions or comments from the board? Well, as you can see, Mr. Mayfield, you created quite a bit of discussion here with
All
that.
Right.
So
awesome.
Thank you for that. So now we're ready to move on to 9.03, ST Math update.
ST Math, yeah, great. We've been talking for a long time in the district about what do we have to support our math programs. Are there interventions out there? Do we have any math programs that we can go to? And we heard about spatial temporal mathematics, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that, which is ST Math. This is Gigi. I'd like to introduce you to Gigi. She's mesmerizing. The kids, like, love Gigi. You know, and the goal is to get Gigi to move from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. But she's turned around in all sorts of different ways, and you have to figure out, spatially, temporally, how to do that. And it's not easy the first time that you do it. But it's the ability, spatial temporal reasoning is the ability to form a mental image and manipulate it over a sequence of steps in space and time.
ST Math is a supplement to our regular Bridges math programs. It's predominantly used in the elementary schools, kindergarten through sixth grade, but it's also used as an intervention at middle schools and even for a couple of students at high school. It's personalized, so students move along at their pace. It has very little writing in it, and students have visual clues to look for as they manipulate. Apparently, one of the authors of the program had difficulties with reading, and so when he created this program, he wanted to make sure that the emphasis wasn't on reading for doing math, but it helps students with their conceptual understanding and also problem solving. Again, there are no instructions or directions per se. There's clues that kids can look for to make progress. We have a little quick video here, if you could click on that, to give you a good overview of what ST Math is.
Welcome to ST Math. ST Math is a game-based learning system that features Gigi the Penguin. Students use mathematical thinking to figure out how to get Gigi past obstacles and across the screen. One of the key design features is that math problems are first introduced with the language, numbers, and symbols removed to be reintroduced later, enabling access for all students to the critical thinking and problem-solving at the heart of mathematics. In the software, this multiplication problem, ostriches have two legs. How many legs does a group of three ostriches have altogether? Becomes a puzzle where all of the key elements are presented entirely visually. Students see and solve a highly interactive game where they choose the number of boops needed by all three ostriches, and Gigi is able to cross the screen. Sequences of these games are organized into learning paths, where as students make progress, the symbols are gradually reintroduced, until by the end of the learning path, students are solving exactly the same math problems they will encounter in any textbook or on any standardized test. There's practically no multiple choice in ST Math. Students actively learn by doing, and every puzzle provides rich, immediate, and informative feedback. Students are able to try things out and learn from their own mistakes. For example, in this volume conversion problem, we need to convert 2.5 gallons into quarts. The student answers incorrectly, choosing 12 quarts. Notice how the software animates the consequences of the student's answer, providing a clear visual of the correct conversion rates of 4 quarts to a gallon, and showing the student precisely why their answer was incorrect. The 2 extra quarts mean Gigi is unable to cross the screen. Students then try the same problem again, immediately able to apply their new understanding. The concept of what 2.5 gallons means visually is clearly animated by the puzzle. This is not just practice software, this is instructional software where students actually learn new ideas. ST Math has over 800 games, and during the course of a single grade level, students will play around 120 games, solving well over 4,000 puzzles. So whether students are working with visual models of fractions on the number line, solving interactive linear equations, or even graph and parabolas in Algebra 1, they're continually engaged in critical thinking, rigorous problem solving, and developing their own intuitive conceptual grasp of math. Teachers also bring ST Math into the classroom as a tool to facilitate student discussions. So by transforming the learning process, ST Math has been able to transform the learning outcomes. Entire districts in California have closed the achievement gap for their English learners, and tens of thousands of students are doubling or even tripling their rate of improvement in math proficiency on state assessments. Currently, ST Math is available for kindergarten through 8th grade with intervention at the high school level. And while 500,000 students are using ST Math, our mission is to ensure that all students are mathematically equipped to solve the world's most challenging problems. And from our research, this can only be achieved when students are learning math by seeing, experiencing, and doing math.
Can we go on to the next slide, Luana? Okay, so ST Math has done some correlation work, and this is their work, from Bridges program to ST Math program. So we can see the units and Bridges that are also covered in ST Math, and it has on their website all the different grade levels that work is done in. The implementation timeline was 15-16. We had it rolled out as an intervention. Spring of 16, it was an elementary pilot at Monarch Grove and Baywood. We did a full one-year implementation at Monarch Grove and Baywood in 16-17. And then year two of that implementation at those two schools. And then in spring of 2018, we introduced the remaining eight elementary sites. And then this year, 18-19, is our full implementation district-wide. The professional development provided by the ST Math folks has been high quality. They've come down and worked with our teachers and helped us to problem solve things that come up. You know, the biggest problem is just finding the time and the day to do a supplementary math program. Teachers don't have enough time to cover all the curriculum, and so that's kind of one of the bigger issues. And how do you find the time to do it as a whole group activity? But the training has been done on-site with teachers. We have site math leads who have been given specialty training. Jen O'Hagan has worked a lot with teachers on ST Math and Techie Boot Camp. And then this year, at the beginning of the year in elementary PD days, we spent some time on ST Math. Okay, so, you know, I don't know that this is necessarily correlational data. I think they would tell you it was. But what we have seen is that the results are positive where ST Math is being used. And the graph on the left-hand side just shows, you know, schools not using it as the flat black line and schools using ST Math as the yellow line. And then on the right-hand side is data from our two schools that initially piloted at Monarch Grove as the blue line and Baywood is the red line, and we saw growth over time, though not the same growth over time, as you can see. Okay, so there's Gigi.
Hi, is there anyone from the public who would like to address this? I will say that, all right, just one moment, please. Would you come forward and state your name, and we will start the three-minute counter?
Oh, sure.
We need you at the...
Move that up a little bit, Laura. The counter.
I'm Jim Campbell, and I was a sub for 5 years in the district. And I was curious, is this going to be used at, say, the high school level resource math, or has it been tried out yet? I sub a lot of classes, and it seemed like there tended to be maybe a higher frustration level with math in resource classes. And I was often wondering, I'm not a math guy, although I did finance for years. I have a brother that's a math guy. And I could feel their frustration. I was thinking, I wonder if there's any software that could assist them with that. Whereas when I was in general ed math classes, mostly again at Slo High, but also at Morro Bay, the frustration level was lower. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so I thought, geez, I'm not a software guy either. Another brother does that. So is that something that is going to be possibly in use at the high school level?
For special ed classes?
Yeah, for special ed classes for math, potentially. I think it was mostly geometry they were working on, maybe some algebra. And I just read about this today. Is there a country that started this out?
No.
In Asia, I think?
Something
like this?
They could be using it. I don't know. But I believe this was developed here in the United States.
Well, I mean the concept.
Right. Thank you for your question. I don't know about special ed classes in particular at the high school level. I do know it has been used for intervention at the high school level. Yeah, and getting kids to persevere through solving these problems is one of the goals of the program. And I understand there's cheat videos on YouTube that children are accessing to when they can't get over a level. They'll look at on YouTube on how to get past that particular part of it.
Okay, Mrs. Frame.
Oh, thank you. So I'm looking at slide number nine. First of all, thank you, Rick.
Sure.
I think it's slide number nine. Yes.
Yes.
So I'm looking
data slide.
At slide number nine, and the first graph from California ST Math analysis. It shows schools that are non-ST Math implementation versus schools that have ST Math implementation, and you can see this clear difference. And when I look at the graph on the right, you know, I'm looking at this graph is not comparing ST versus non-ST.
Correct.
And so could we, you know, have had or include, you know, I know the numbers are low, but have a, you know, school like Del Mar to see really that comparison between ST and non-ST. And the other question would be, you know, ST math being supplement, teachers having, you know, struggling with time, wouldn't we see the same trajectory between Baywood and Monarch? You know, there's a clear difference. You know, Baywood doesn't have as much growth. So, I mean, just questions to tease out.
Absolutely.
Again,
with data, you know, it's difficult. If you throw another school up there and they had another significant intervention in mathematics at their site, you know, what would that do to the data? And I think Del Mar is one school that did quite well in their math scores. And one of the reasons is because they had another intervention that they were using instead of ST math. So I think the conclusion that I would emphasize from these graphs is that there's positive growth in math at the sites that are using ST math. And we could not say that that's correlated directly to the use of ST math. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
Thanks. Somewhere along the line in this, I got the impression or read or talked to somebody that this is a self-progressing. So student A may have trouble getting, what's the guy's name, across the screen?
Gigi.
Getting Gigi across the screen, and another student's five steps ahead.
Right.
And I personally think that's great. And the problem I have is I think we have benchmarks or standards that we want to reach by the end of a, say, third grade. And so if that student that's just getting now to five and there's another student that's at level 10, is there something we do towards the end of the year to try and close that? Because then they'd be going on to the next year less prepared and then less prepared.
That's a good question.
I don't know how a teacher does that.
I have an expert in the audience who might be able to help me with that. Mrs. Storm, would you mind?
Thanks for staying long.
It was this or put two kids with a fever to bed. I'll take the board meeting. So with this, one of the things that we have is a dashboard that shows syllabus progress. And the goal is that you want students at 85% syllabus progress, either by the time they start the CAS test or like into the year. So we're watching syllabus progress, and one of the things that we do at Monarch is we actually use some of our Title I money to have an after-school group for kids that are not maybe making as much syllabus progress as we would like so that they get the extra time. A lot of times they get stuck on a puzzle and they can't get around it. And so we've looked at, we did some work just a couple months ago with the dashboard and how you can tell if a kid is stuck and what to do, and you can put it into like a teacher drive mode and get them through it and some of that. So teachers really have to know the dashboard and watch and see if kids are stalling out on it. And we do open the homework so they can work on it at home if they want to. And now with the T-Mobile grant and the Chromebooks, that really helps. And then it stays open over the summer, and they can work on it. And kids that finish early get challenge puzzles, and that is what I hear is on YouTube. Those are incredibly difficult challenge puzzles, and but it's great for those early finishers. So.
Thank you.
That probably said more than you wanted, but.
I just want to make sure those kids were something.
Yeah.
Mrs. Frame?
Yeah, thank you, Laura. I just wanted to also make everyone aware that this wasn't really designed as an intervention program. It's really designed, and it is really dependent on teachers, so that you cannot set students up in a center. It is teacher facilitated in order to, you know, walk around. So that means that, you know, in order to implement this to our at-risk students, they can't really do it at home, even if they have a portal technology, because they don't have parents that are able to help facilitate, you know, that program through. And that's why you really do need to have something after school for them.
Well, and one of the things that that Mind did for us is they aligned it to Bridges, And so the order of the ST Math curriculum for San Luis Coastal is customized to match the Bridges order. So we go in the same order. And so a lot of times what teachers do is they wait to open the homework until they've, after they've taught it in Bridges. So they teach it in Bridges, and then they'll open it in homework in ST Math, which has been really helpful.
And I would say that when I sat in an elementary classroom and a student explained to me about Gigi and how great Gigi was and helped me get Gigi across the screen the first time, I was very excited. So it is it's really engaging. That little penguin is so engaging. So thank you for that, for that presentation.
You bet.
And I don't see you going anywhere. So
one more.
We'll move on to 9.04, the federal program monitoring, which I know has been taking vast amounts of your time.
It's an in-depth process. We'll bring up the results for you here. These are the official results from California Department of Education. I don't know if I can scroll down. Can you scroll just so I can see that box right there? So we were reviewed in five program areas, and the FPM is conducted by the California Department of Education, and it involves what used to be categorical programs, but compensatory education is Title I, II, and III, English learner, fiscal monitoring, homeless education, and physical education. There are, I think, 12 categories in total that they can monitor you in, and they just elect different programs for different school districts. It's a process that occurs about every 5 or 6 years. Sometimes there's a visitation involved. I believe the last two that we went through involved visitation, but this one was online only. So those were the five areas. As you can see with findings on the right-hand side, there were many, many, many evidence requests that we uploaded onto the website to demonstrate our practices in those areas. And we ended up with three findings, all within the English learner category. If we could scroll to the first one, Luana. The two schools that were involved in the, other than the district, the district as a whole was involved, but C.L. Smith and Pacheco were specifically looked at in those areas. Continue down if you would. There we go. First one is reclassification. As I mentioned earlier, it's really semantic. So to redesignate a student as fluent, proficient in English, there are several factors. LPAC is one. SBAC results are another. The student's scores on the BAS or the SRI. And then there's a teacher component to it. And our language did not have a specific measurement that teachers would use. It basically, we actually took it from the California Department of Education website. But the explanation basically said that the teacher will have input as to whether the student is ready for redesignation or not. And we have come up with language, shared it with them. They're in agreement that it's sufficient language, and it does say that students will have a 3 on the report card in all areas of language arts, and if they do not, and the teacher still feels that they should be redesignated, then they just provide a simple explanation. And that language will be taken to DLAC. It's been shared with the EL specialists, and it essentially amounts to teacher discretion, which is as it should be with redesignation. So that's a pretty simple fix. We'll have that done by the deadline of February 3rd. Okay, the next two, number 2 and 3, are combined, and they involve English language development instruction and English language development materials. And we shared some of the excellent work we've done with ELD in our district over time and how it connects to our core curriculum of Lucy Calkins at the elementary and what we've done in secondary. And you know, they were kind of stuck on the fact that we did not have universal designated English language development for all of our English learners, that we couldn't show designated ELD within all of our schools. And then in the secondary level, English learner students need to have a core English language arts class and then an additional ELD class. And
you know, to be honest, that's kind of an old model. And we discussed that at length, Don Addis and I, at length with our reviewer. And he said that, okay, he'll work with us and we can come up with a plan on what ELD is going to look like, K-12, and what materials we will use. And so we're in the process of doing that. I anticipate that we will need to ask for an extension of the February 3rd deadline to submit that plan, and that plan will have to include a letter from Dr. Prater indicating that the school district will follow through with this plan, you know, so that they can avoid people just sending them schedules and say, here, everybody's going to do designated ELD for a half hour a day. So we talked at length about our results, and we said, you know, the results should drive this process, and we outperform students in English learner category, RFEP category, SCD category, to the state, to the county, to all the school districts in the county, and that should, you know, speak to the effectiveness of our programs. But those were the three findings, and to be honest, I'm happy with those findings. I think it gives us an opportunity to focus in on a group of students that always needs our attention, and I think we can get better at ELD instruction, K-12, and this will give us the impetus to do so.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak to us on this item? All right. Coming back to the board, Mr. Buckman.
How many board items have you been standing there with?
The first thing I asked the state was, isn't there a rookie waiver I can get for a year? I'd be happy to do it next year. They said no.
Maybe we can just get you a stool and you could just... I just have to congratulate you and just say that, you know, all this work and it's all culminating in things like this and the good work that you're doing. So, and doing on behalf of the staff and students. So
thank you.
I have nothing to really say about the report because it's great, but I just wanted to thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. I see you chomping at the bit. It's next is 9.05 CTE update and approval on the CTE Advisory Committee. And I see Liz Moore. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about CTE. Especially after Dr. Brescia was here telling you the good things happening. He stole my thunder a little bit. But the county's doing, we have a strong county effort. Let's see if I can make this work. Well, I wanted you to look at the logo. Our effort is no longer career or college, it's career and college. And that just goes to the point that it's gone career or Voc Ed has come a long way, so now we call it CTE, and at our district we're making sure that it is career and college. That means exploring multiple careers for students, learning job-ready skills with entry-level certifications, learning the relevance of labor market need, and having your four-year plan or even longer mapped out towards additional training in a field that you have chosen. Oopsie. So the progress we've made towards our goal, an interesting stat that came out is that practically 100% of our students are taking at least one career technical education class, and the students that are not are transfer students. I don't know if I can click any of the links. So if you do the MBHS, we're looking at some of the completer stats. Across the board, we're looking at students that are career and college ready, so complete a pathway as well as being A through G. While our effort isn't to move everybody over to the career and college ready, we want to move students towards that. Our real effort is to move students out of the neither A through G nor pathway completer. Can you do the Samuels one? So we're just... These are the stats we're gathering so that we can compare from year to year. Some of these stats, we're starting to just get a more solid grasp on them. And again, just making sure that we're moving students away from neither A through G nor pathway completer. Next. We have a district brochure. just to show you, we have Aspen Bryant and Eddie Smith as, I think you met them last year, as our CTE Students of the Year. The next, can I show you the next one? We made some posters. The middle schools were wanting some promotional items about CTE. They said, we want something really big to show. And I asked them how big, so they really only wanted 24 by 36-ish. So we did that. And then can you go to the sandwich? Sorry, that's so big. These are really big. They wanted to make sure that we put this, if the student had gone to school here from elementary through middle school and high school, that we noted that as well. So we have these posters that are out in the community and in the schools. Eddie Smith's mom saw it. She said, I really want one of those. I told her, if you get me a quote from Eddie, I possibly will. Our website is up to date, just so that you know, it's a link, one of the ways we're communicating career technical education. It has some links on the side, but that's, go ahead. It's okay. And then you don't have to click on those two, but just to know that Jordan Cunningham and, and Salud Carbajal are behind our CTE effort in obtaining more funding, ongoing funding for CTEG and our Perkins grant. We're also working with the Workforce Development Board, and that I included a 19-page report on the labor market in our area. One of the ways that we are becoming college and career ready is looking at making all our career technical education classes A through G approved, so you can't basically can't take any CT class without getting at least a G towards your college entrance. I think that it's a good possibility we can get to 100% with all of our classes. We're also dual enrolling with Cuesta, and Sabrina Robertson has been fantastic in looking at all the opportunities that we can take to dual enroll, and we have about 27 courses that we're bringing to Cuesta. The process is that we bring them to Cuesta, they review them, and then it's kind of the teacher at Cuesta, the instructor at Cuesta, and the San Luis Coastal instructor get together and decide whether it's a good fit. Cuesta does have, in some departments, you have to have a master's in that subject area, which prohibits some of our courses being dual enrolled. The great news is that the CTEG grant was approved for ongoing funding. They don't have a termination date, so we're just going to keep reapplying every year. They broke it into two pots. One is the school district just reapplies. The other is through the strong workforce, K-12 strong workforce. A little history on that is that the last 3 years, the last funding cycle with that, the state gave money to businesses and the community colleges to figure out how to better partner business and education. And now this next funding cycle, they're going to be doing that in including K-12. So the county is applying for that part of the grant for all of us, and then we'll be doing our district application for the other pot of the CTEG. Our Prop 51 funding, we put some real strong application in for the matching grant. We'll find out, I think, in February. The middle school is wanting to come into the conversation. How they want to know if they can spend a little money and how that applies to our plan for technical education. And there's some really good ideas coming there. And I included a recommended article on CTEG funding. Connecting with business is a big priority. And some of the ways that we're doing that, we're building up our district advisory committee, and tonight I'm going to ask you to approve the members. I included the minutes for you to look at. We're working with our K-12 strong workforce partners. Our deputy sector navigator is Gayla Jurevich, and she's doing a workshop for some of the dual enrolled students coming up in February. Another way is that our Just One is coming up in March. And last year we had over 50 businesses interviewing the students, and we plan to be a little bit larger, and we're working on that. We're also using the Morro Bay and the San Luis Chamber of Commerce as resources and all of our individual business partner relationships. So what are our next steps? I think the state is telling us that they funded us first round of CTEG funding. It looked like everybody kind of updated their equipment. Everything needed to be updated. There hadn't been funding in a while at that level. And now that they're going to refund it and keep it ongoing, they're asking to take a time to come up with a comprehensive plan, take a minute, you know, step back and say, what can we really do to make this CTE program, you know, relevant with the labor market data? Your school and district needs to have a 5-year plan that you're following to apply for these grants. You want your advisory committees to be working and worthwhile and giving you the information that you need for your classrooms to keep your industry experience relevant. We want to keep our curriculum updated, and we want to make sure each pathway has a certification tied to it. Those are some of our goals. So any questions?
First of all, I'd like to go to the public, see if anyone would like to address us. And seeing none, come back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Surprise. So I read the report. I can't remember the title. The economic.
The 19-page report?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I came away from that with, you know, some key thoughts. But one of them is very expensive. Obviously, we all know. Very expensive to live here. Jobs are not, you don't have the, most jobs don't give you the ability to do that. And then I'm putting that together, hopefully, with your and our CTE programs and the teachers need to place students in jobs, and it'd be great if we were, and the report also said we didn't have a whole lot of those high-level paying jobs in the area. But we need to be able to place students in those jobs. And so, just is there a way? Are you struggling with that? Are the high-paying jobs opening the doors to us?
I think that we're talking about a student's pathway there to success. That's going to be their whole life, and we're taking them K through 12 and helping them think about what their skills are, what they're good at, how they can make a living. But we're not necessarily saying you can't change at all. So we're giving them the next couple steps in their pathway, how to get to a 4-year college, how to get to some more training at Cuesta, how to get to some certifications. I don't think maybe stepping right out of college you're ready to be at the highest paid job. It takes some time and training. So I think that I feel like we're pointing them that way and giving them some plans and a pathway to get there, but you're not necessarily ready right after high school to step into the high-paying job, so, but to go towards it.
And I appreciate that, and it's great. But for my kids, the work experience, even back then, was really critical. My daughter worked at Home Buffet, taking the food from the day before, slopping it into another pan, and then adding new food. Yep. And she learned that she was never going to eat at Home Depot again. And that's that example of that low-end work experience. So are there opportunities within the community and have businesses been finding the higher-end experience while they're in school here? So that work experience part of it.
When you are talking about higher-end...
Tech versus Home Depot. Home Buffet. So is Mind?
Well,
is Mind Body opening their? Are they open to having our students come in and do work experience? Is French Hospital?
So those are good questions. We do approach everyone we can think of in the community and get a variety of responses for the Just One, which leads to the internships. So a place like French Hospital could maybe do a job shadow, but then there's some confidentiality things. Mind Body will bring anybody for a couple days. They'll do tours. They'll come to your classroom. They haven't offered any internships yet. We have asked them. They have tried Cal Poly internships, so we're trying to, you know, get some in there. We are asking and putting students wherever we can get them in. And they're it seems as though the business community is very willing to come and interview at the Just One, and sometimes it changes their idea of what high school students are, and mostly for the better. And they come saying, I don't know if I really want to hire someone or job shadow. And after they talk to the students, they say, oh, gosh, I'll take three, you know. So we are we're asking right. and following up a little bit.
And I love the Just One. And so what I'm hearing is that in having the work experience for our students, getting into those ability to support a family jobs, the high tech, the high end jobs, is just as difficult as for the adults in our community finding those jobs. So I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm just hoping that everybody will continue to keep working with us on finding those positions.
Yeah, I think so. We have a good response for our business community for sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other?
We do need to make sure we approve the membership to the CT Advisory Committee.
Oh. It was, I saw it as a link.
The members are at the back of the, at the bottom of the minutes, at the
at
end
the
of the minutes.
At the bottom of the minutes. How is that committee, how is it decided who would serve on that?
There are some rules in our, according to our Perkins grant, and it's a federal grant, so we followed the rules from the Perkins Advisory Committee manual. And they have a variety, they list the variety of different people, representatives of special populations, EDD, parents, students, business representatives, that kind of thing.
Okay. I see there's a school board member on that committee, and I didn't know whether it was something that came before that was to be decided by the board or how that works.
He was invited? And this was the list from the last meeting we had.
Okay.
The people that came.
Mr. Buckman, are you representing the school board on that committee?
Yeah, I would absolutely love to represent the school board. Are you still open to that?
I mean, we didn't vote on that earlier.
No, and I'm not sure we can because it wasn't on the agenda. But, I mean, having the experience, working with Liz on and off on a regular basis. Well,
but at this time, you're not.
I don't think we can vote on it because
it's not agendized.
Okay. It's not agendized. But maybe Eric.
It is right. CTE update and approval on the CTE Advisory Committee is 9.05.
Yeah. Liz will still have me,
I guess my confusion is in what capacity are you serving? Is it as a board member or is it as a community member?
What do you think?
That's a great question.
Yeah, because we didn't.
Is a board member allowed to be on this committee? Well, is there any conflict of interest with that?
You know, I'm sorry. I'm gonna interrupt. I think that we need to bring this back.
Okay. We'll do that. Thank you.
So is that acceptable to the board to table this at this item and have it come back after we have clarification on the membership of the committee?
Yeah.
Do I see a thumbs up on that?
I mean, I don't.
Well, it hasn't come before us. If Mr. Buckman is serving as a board representative or as a community representative, because it didn't. Wasn't opened up on our list of committees. Dr. Prater.
Yeah, I apologize for this. Let me bring this back. I will look at this more thoroughly and bring this back to you at our next board meeting.
Okay.
With more information.
All right.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your informative presentation. Yeah, this is great. Great stuff. And
very short.
Okay, so next we have our initial proposal of the board.
with for negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association.
Yeah, so SLCTA and the district are starting negotiations on February 5th. And so the next two items are our initial proposals, and Emily is here as well. So if you have any questions, the first item is your Board of Education proposal to start negotiations. So you do need to adopt these.
All right. Is there anyone from the public here to address this? Seeing no one, I'll come back to the board for discussion or a motion. Mr. Unger.
I move that we accept the initial proposal by the district to begin negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association.
And I'll second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 7-0. Thank you.
Okay, and the next item is just presented to you. You don't need to adopt these. This is the proposal from SLCTA to you.
That would make for a very short negotiation.
I bet you really like that.
I'll write a few more things.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this item? All right. Then thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming.
All right. Next, we have 9.08, which is proposed revisions to board policy. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you. Tonight we do have kind of a leftover from FPM. So we have a suggestion from, I use that term a little bit loosely, suggestion from FPM of this board policy that there's actually a few resources is the only adjustment. You'll notice in red notes that there were about four references that needed to be added due to the FPM process. In order for that process to be completed, I had to submit a letter that said that these references would be added to the end of the board policy. My recommendation is that you go ahead and, on a first reading, accept just the addition of those resources. And if you have additional additions or edits to the policy, that the subcommittee did note that they would be happy to bring it back at a time when they look through the actual wording of the policy. But in order to be in compliance with FPM, it's just the simple addition of those references.
Okay. Is there anyone here from the public to talk to us about this board policy? All right, seeing no one and realizing that this is important to move the FPM process along. I would appreciate a motion. I know we generally prefer a second reading, but this is a special circumstance.
Dr. I move that we add the recommended references that we see before us on Board Policy 6142.7, page D.
Right. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All
right. Thank you. Item 9.09, Measure D, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes. Again, there's three things that go in terms of releasing us from the lease-back agreement with Wysong Construction. The first was the resolution that the board originally passed. Now is the actual termination of the contract that I'm going to ask the board to pass now. And then later in the consent agenda, you'll see the actual notice of completion. So it's kind of the three phases that need to take place for us to go ahead and end this contractual relationship since the project has been completed.
All right. Anyone from the public on this Measure D topic? Any questions, comments by the board? Dr. Eisenjath Rogers.
Oh, no, sorry.
Oh,
that was
well,
me.
Then perhaps you'd like to make a motion since your light is on. We need to vote on the term on this item. But if not, someone.
Okay. I move that we accept the termination agreement and quit claim deed for Bellevue Santa Fe New Construction Modernization Lease Back Project.
And I'll second.
And it looks great out there.
It turned out really nice.
Yeah.
It really did. Now they have the new furniture in the classrooms, too.
Yeah.
Hopefully you got to see that on
Gives
Thursday.
Gives us an excuse to
Made
go
Made a
there.
Big difference, yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you
Thank
very
you.
Much. All right. Next is our action consent portion of the agenda. Please let me know if anyone would like one of these items pulled. Item 10.01, approve the quarterly report on uniform complaint filings. 2.02, approval of field study trip requests. 10.03, Measure D, approved notice of completion. 10.04, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 10.05, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll. I didn't hear anything.
I move approval of items 10.01 to 10.06.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you. Anyone have any topics for the advanced agenda, Mr. Unger?
Yes, I do. I think that I would like to ask the board whether they have an interest in engaging in a discussion on beginning a demographic study for our area.
Elaborate on
sure,
that?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's been probably about 5 years since we've done a demographic mm-hmm. study in this area regarding and looking at housing patterns in relationship to property taxes, but as well, I think we need to do it to verify that our current election system still qualifies under the California Voting Rights Act.
As to the creation of separate districts?
Mm-hmm. Right, correct. So I would ask for support. I would ask for support on the initiation of, well, the discussion on whether we need to initiate a demographic survey.
So I would totally support that. And I think according to our normal protocol, if two of us ask for it, then it comes back at least one more time to the board, just if I remember that correctly. So you have my support, Chris.
Mr. Millar.
I'd like to know more about what implications a demographic study would have for this district-wide versus individual trustee area election question. I didn't know that it had to do with demographic studies. But additionally, we did a demographic study. I'd be interested to know what the cost would be and what mm-hmm. we're actually going to gain from the study. Maybe staff could present something to us about that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was thinking, Walter.
Yeah.
I
think all I'd those like things. To know cost. And
yeah, the cost. Okay. But also I'm interested in the what development looks like in term what development looks like in what it might implicate for our property taxes, things like that. But I am specifically interested in the California voter rights information and that sort of thing.
I think I'd like to just tack on to that. It's my understanding that Mike Smith is going to be engaged on behalf of the county to look into this on behalf of all the districts. So I would suggest that we wait and hear from Mike Smith. Does that make sense as to, I don't know when, I know that he's been contacted and this is being discussed with him and see, maybe get some advice from him as to whether that's needed at this time or whether he has a plan in place as to how to proceed yeah. after this was served. I know something was served on
Paso.
That's exactly the kind of discussion that I'm looking to have.
Okay.
And I appreciate everyone's support on that.
So it sounds informational at this point.
Yeah.
Not engaging anyone. Mr.
No,
Buck?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mr. Buck, is that acceptable? I mean, we've got the... Okay.
So what was the resolution? It'll be informational?
It'll be informational at this point. Yeah. Mr. Buckman.
So I also have an interest. It's kind of related, but... I noticed on one of the reports that we've hired 10 new credentialed teachers this time. And what I'm wondering then is what's driving that? So maybe a report, and this is something that Mrs. Rogers sometimes requests, is a look at what's the attendance in our schools. And we used to get that sort of on a semi-regular basis. This might be a topic facing for future decisions for us as a board, when it comes to class size and hiring patterns, as well as the property taxes. So just maybe an update of growth in our schools since the beginning of the school year. And I'm just looking, part of what's sparking this is I was at one school site where they were, the comment was, I'm just getting new students every day or every week. And then the other thing that really cemented this for me is we just hired 10 new credentialed people.
But there's substitutes.
No, I looked at that carefully. It was substitutes, but it was also there were regular credentialed staff.
They're all credentialed, but they're new hires as substitutes.
Were they all substitutes?
Yeah. I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. I thought
it's all listed under certificated substitutes. Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was all. But anyway, my understanding is that we're getting some actually increase in number of students. It could be very minimal then if it's only one school site. But I still wouldn't mind seeing how many students at each school site. Evelyn's suggesting subgroups as well. So it just would be good information. It doesn't have to be something as a board presentation. It really could be just information provided to us. So I don't know if there's consensus or not.
So I would be happy to put together a Friday update on growth trends and see if I could even break it down into subgroups so you can kind of see what's going on. I do hear from principals this time of year, and certainly before the holidays, we seem to be getting a lot of new families. And those families that have come in have seemingly some pretty significant needs. When I then broke that down and started looking at it, it might have certainly felt that way. As a former principal, I do know that feeling. But what seemed like new students every day for the last month, my calculation was 7 students.
In the district?
In a particular school across a span of grades. But I don't want to dismiss people that are working really hard, and it may seem like a lot to them, and it does. And so I will be happy to put those numbers together because I'm curious myself as to where we're landing mid-year.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Millar.
We used to receive on a regular basis, a weekly basis, the student population. What was it? Grade levels and total student population.
We have enrollment.
Well, you know,
that seems like that's kind of what.
Yeah, I've been here almost 9 years now, and so it's we do provide those enrollment reports at the start of the year for the first 5 weeks.
It's been that long ago for me.
Yeah, and so, but I'd be more than happy to. Put those pieces in place. It's good information to have and be aware of. I did, I did put together some our latest CBEDs or our latest enrollment for class size and all those things, and I provided that to you. I will keep doing that for you as well, so you have that. It's good information to have. Really good. Yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Reports by board members. Well, not hearing anything. I know we've all been busy and out and about, but as is fulfilling our board member duties. And on that note, we will adjourn. Oh,
I was going to say something. I just wanted to say thank you to the board members for welcoming.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
That's part of it's part of the duties we refer to. All right, we will adjourn. And our next meeting date isn't on. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Owen.